Chapter 42. Rosy, passionate lamplight by opening the curtains and letting in garish day. Then I am going, he said. Very well, she answered, stretching one hand round to him, and patting her eyes with a handkerchief held in the other. Shall I write a line to you at? No, no. A gentle reasonableness came into her tone as she added, it must not be, you know. It won't do. Very well. Goodbye. The next moment he was gone. In the evening, with listless adroitness, she encouraged the maid who dressed her for dinner to speak of Dr. Fitzpiers' marriage. Mrs. Fitzpiers was once supposed to favor Mr. Winterbourne, said the young woman. And why didn't she marry him? Said Mrs. Charmond. Because, you see, ma'am, he lost his houses. Lost his houses? How came he to do that? The houses were held on lives, and the lives dropped, and your agent wouldn't renew them, though it is said that Mr. Winterbourne had a very good claim. That's as I've heard it, ma'am, and it was through it that the match was broke off. Being just then distracted by a dozen emotions, Mrs. Charmond sunk into a mood of dismal self-reproach. And refusing that poor man his reasonable request, she said to herself, I foredoomed my rejuvenated girlhood's romance. Who would have thought such a business matter could have nettled my own heart like this? Now for a winter of regrets and agonies and useless wishes, till I forget them in the spring. Oh, I am glad I am going away. She left her chamber, and went down to dine with a sigh. On the stairs she stood opposite the large window for a moment, and looked out upon the lawn. It was not yet quite dark. Halfway up the steep green slope confronting her stood old Timothy Tangs, who was shortening his way homeward, by clambering here where there was no road, and in opposition to express orders that no path was to be made there. Tangs had momentarily stopped to take a pinch of snuff, but observing Mrs. Charmond gazing at him, he hastened to get over the top out of hail. His precipitancy made him miss his footing, and he rolled like a barrel to the bottom, his snuffbox rolling in front of him. Her indefinite, idle, impossible passion for Fitzpiers, her constitutional cloud of misery, the sorrowful drops that still hung upon her eyelashes, all made way for the incursive mood started by the spectacle. She burst into an immoderate fit of laughter, her very gloom of the previous hour seeming to render it the more uncontrollable. It had not died out of her when she reached the dining room, and even here, before the servants, her shoulders suddenly shook as the scene returned upon her, and the tears of her hilarity mingled with the remnants of those engendered by her grief. She resolved to be sad no more. She drank two glasses of champagne, and a little more still after those, and amused herself in the evening with singing little amatory songs. I must do something for that poor man Winterbourne, however, she said. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.